Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
If I feel stuck, the goal isn't, you know, getting out of the hole. It's I'm able to take a step forward toward the ladder to get out of the hole. And I just give myself some grace. Like, yeah. Okay, I'm having a hard day. This is all I can accomplish today.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, welcome to today's episode. According to a recent Pew Research study, 71% of all adults say having a job or career they enjoy is extremely or very important in order for people to live a fulfilling life. I imagine we'd all agree with that. Most of us, probably even more than 71% of us, listen to this show. But 40% of executives and even more leaders at other levels say they're dissatisfied with their work environment. And that brings us to our guest today, who has a diverse background as a trial lawyer, a seasoned CEO, mindset author, distinguished executive coach, and C-suite team facilitator. His name is Jack Craven, and he has spent the last 9 years leading countless business leaders into more fulfilling, authentic lives. In his work, he continually found what he personally experienced in his CEO role. Leaders aren't necessarily satisfied with their lives, but feel guilty asking for more because they know they're privileged and blessed. So if that feels sounds like you, if you're feeling some empathy there with a little sympathy to some of those leaders that Jack has coached, you're in the right place to help you become fully immersed in your aliveness, live your best professional and personal life. Jack Craven, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Well, David, thank you. It was a wonderful introduction, and I really look forward to our conversation.
Well, as am I. So the name of your book is Aliveness Mindset, Lead and Live with More Passion, Purpose, and Joy. And I was certainly attracted to those words. Well, lead and live, we're all about that on the show. With more passion, more purpose, more joy. Fantastic. So before we dive into the book, I want to ask you if you could take us back to one of your earliest memories of yourself as a leader, however you might define that.
You know, that's a great question. And I was just reflecting on this. It was really in college. I had pledged a fraternity and there was an opportunity to be Rush chairman, which is the person who is responsible for meeting people and getting them to commit to your fraternity. And I did that because you have a major influence in the people who are going to be in the house and going to be your roommates. And I thought, what a great job is that? So I did it not only for one semester, for two semesters. And guess what? All of the people that I got into the fraternity became my best friends. And later this month, we're going to be celebrating a big weekend together. And that's 40 years ago.
Oh, wow. Those long-term friends are amazing. I'm also seeing some friends I have been friends with since, I guess, not quite 40 years, but going on that next week. So I'm looking forward to that as well. You can't make old friends.
Amen.
Well, I guess you can, but it takes decades to do it. Well, and you know, that memory of yourself as a leader, you know, I was reminded of that as I got into your book, because diving into the aliveness mindset, right off the bat, you talk about a couple of critical questions that we can reflect on as leaders and that you ask your clients. These two questions about aliveness. So rather than me say them, I want to hear them in your voice for our listeners. with the inflection and everything, because I thought these were such important questions as just the groundwork for everything you're talking about here.
Well, I asked a lot of questions in the book, and I hope I'm going in the direction, David, but I'll do my best. And if I'm not on your page, then you'll throw up the
other. I think you'll be on this page. We're talking about your very first, foundational one.
Yeah. When did you last feel alive? When did you last feel alive, you know, not just in your mind, but like your whole body, where there was some visceral experience of you just feeling like the best version of yourself? And then the next question is, what if you could feel like that every day?
All right. So I hope that you are really taking a pause and take a beat to answer those questions for yourself as you're listening here. And having read them is one thing. Hearing them from you, I immediately have answers. I know they're going to be different than everybody else's answers, right? Yeah. So my answer most recently, when did I most feel alive? I'd go a few months back to, I did a 50-mile ultramarathon trail run.
Wow.
And as exhausted and beat down as you are at the end of 50 miles, you also feel pretty darn alive. Yeah. So that was one for me. That there have been others, but that was certainly one. Yeah.
I love that. And I think what you're highlighting is that it's going to be different for every person. And sometimes it's going to be something significant, like doing that ultra marathon kind of race that you're talking about. And those are great. And I also want to invite people to think that there can be small moments where we also feel that level of aliveness. And I really look at this whole framework, David, as a mental game. And it's a game where I'm invested because it's about the quality and quantity of my life. And so it takes a lot of intention and practice. And more than anything, it's just the belief that I can feel alive any day that I want, no matter what I'm doing.
Mm. And so part of that is, what does aliveness actually mean? Because obviously, I mean, even if I am to do another one, I can only do one of those a year. So I get to feel alive more than one day a year, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you brought that up, which is, I think that sometimes people feel that that's being selfish. And we can begin to get into involved our own inner value systems about what that would mean if we were to have our aliveness, and how might that impact others. And I really believe that that's a way to hold things back. You hold yourself back. And I think that the more that you can believe in this practice and show up in the way of being the best version of yourself, the others around you, actually, they want to see you feel alive. They like that version. And it really is a contagious energy.
Yeah, I recognize what you're saying. I definitely have wrestled with that over the years, and in the later third of my life, have definitely recognized the feedback I get from other people is they certainly enjoy me and benefit from me and my leadership far more when I am in that state of aliveness than when I'm not.
That's great. And so then sometimes it starts off, I just finished a client session before this call, and the client is going through some significant issues with his business partner. And as we're winding down and transitioning, and I just asked this, which is, what's one thing that you could do to feel alive today? Just one little thing. And his response was very quick. And he said, having a date night with my wife. And I said, would you be willing to commit to doing that tonight? And he did. And so sometimes it could be a big thing. Sometimes it's just a small step that we could take to have that feeling of aliveness.
Well, I'm going to have to hit the elliptical tonight, I think, is where this is going. But let's step back for a minute to what we've been using the word and kind of defining it via, like, what does it feel like, what for each of us as we think about being alive? How do you define it? When we're talking about aliveness, you've written an entire book about aliveness and the state of being alive. Can you walk us through what you actually mean by that?
Yeah, for me, aliveness is a state of being, bringing the best version of yourself into your day-to-day experience. And so wherever you're going to be, that's the lens from which you want to look at things. In other words, if you're looking at your job, and this is another common thing I hear, my job is a grind, or it has been a grind the last week, month, quarter, then that's what your experience is going to be. If your lens is that I want to feel alive as I'm tackling some of these challenges or the things that are coming on, you're going to relate to it in a whole different way. And one of my beliefs on a deep level is that what we tell ourselves becomes our reality. So the more that we can bring this version of aliveness into our lens and our day-to-day experience, the better that we're going to be relating to all of these experiences.
So aliveness is not necessarily dependent on our external circumstances. And yeah, go ahead.
No, I could not have said it better. And I think that where a lot of us get hung up, and I want to say myself included, was that I was reflecting when I was about 50 that on paper, a lot of things were the definition of success, and yet I felt unsatisfied. And I think a lot of that was because I was basing my happiness on what was on my calendar, which was not invigorating, which was not feeling like a lot of purpose. And so that's when I decided that's not a game that I'm winning. So how can I create a game and a framework of life where I'm winning in ways that really matter to me?
All right, well, let's dive into that a little bit more. And the context for me as I'm thinking about this conversation and approaching our conversation today, I was talking with someone in one of the organizations, one of our clients this week, and they were expressing some frustration with a senior leader who was espousing these values of doing things and living their life in a way that wasn't really open to the people in the rest of the organization. You know, pronouncements about never missing their child's sports game and everything like that, when there are people in the organization who have shifts that make that impossible, you know, those kinds of things. And so this idea of finding that state of aliveness where you are and whatever is going on, I think is really important for shaping that and the energy that you're talking about. So you've got a practice for us, an aliveness practice that we can walk through to start to get there. So I'd like to invite you to walk us through that, and let's start exploring that a little bit and see where it takes us.
Yeah, thank you. I would be happy to. It all started for me. I didn't know that I was creating a process. I just did things, little bits and pieces, to shift from leading an unsatisfied life to transitioning my career to becoming a coach to being more satisfied. And certainly there was a lot of fear of the unknown. Imagine if you're 52 years old, you're changing careers, you're starting from scratch, and your family and your future depend on it. And again, if you're focused on, I have to get this done and what's going to happen, now you're all locked in fear. But what I decided to do was I believed in myself, and I started telling myself the things like, what traits would bring out the best version of me today? And what I did in my own little trial and error method, David, is one of the first things I thought about is I was very serious when I was a leader. And I believe that most of the time when we're serious, that's actually masking fear. Mm-hmm. And that does ring true to me, that I was fearful about all the things that could go wrong. And so to counter that, my first mindset every day is play. I just want to play. Underneath me, David, I'm a 60-year-old, is a 9-year-old kid who just wants to run around. Mm-hmm. And so play is the first word. I call these anchoring mindsets. These are what anchor me to be in my version of aliveness. And then there's certainly words in the book that are common, but for me, it's play, connect, learn and grow, and have impact. And so those are my anchoring mindsets. And so what I do is every morning, I recite those. I have them in prominent places around my house. And even after doing this for over a decade, I still need to remind myself, because we're human beings and we are wired for survival. And so we're going to forget, especially when we're in fear. So it's the anchoring mindsets as part of the practice. Other reminders could be on your phone. I have images all over my desk in my bedroom of me feeling alive with my family, with my wife, with our dog, with my college friends, whatever it is, I have those pictures. And so consciously and unconsciously, it's reminding me to be and feel alive.
So you talked about anchoring. So for you, the word play, and you had some others there the connection and yeah, growing and so forth. So you're, when you say anchor, is that recalling to mind? Let's just explore anchor just a little bit further.
Yeah. I think it goes back, David, to your idea that, if you're dependent on your calendar or what's going on to be your aliveness, that often, at least for me, that did not lead to aliveness. It led to, you know, I guess some levels of frustration or reactivity, or maybe some element of feeling good about it. Anchor is these mindsets are what ground me. And that if I do get reactive, which of course we're going to get reactive multiple times throughout the day, this is where I return home to. Home isn't my calendar, which is, again, that's the game I'm going to lose. Home is, how do I want to show up? And so these anchoring mindsets are a way for me to have a greater chance of success to show up the way I want to.
You just said something I think is so important. I might even go so far as to say profound, Jack, is that the, and I'm going to extend it, your calendar isn't your success, your to-do list isn't your success. None of that is the defining thing. It's how I'm showing up.
Yes.
And so often, I'm thinking about myself here as I go through this exercise mentally, but so often when I'm out of whack, it's because I've lost sight of that, and I'm focused on one of these other elements, and now I'm feeling stressed because I'm playing a game I can't possibly win. None of us can ever win our calendar. None of us can ever win our to-do list. Those are impossibilities.
It's certainly difficult. And I'm just thinking of another leader who had an upcoming board meeting. And what we discovered in the conversation, because he was really stressed about it, is that he was more focused on getting through the board meeting than showing up powerfully. And so what we began to think about, what were his anchoring mindsets to show up powerfully in front of that board meeting? And one of his intentions was to blow the board away with his impressive strategy, you know, all of the great things that he's done. So again, it's just a toggle of the mind. When we're in fear, we just want to get through it. When we're in our power, when we're feeling alive, we have a much greater potential. And that's what gets me excited.
I'm curious, what are some other anchoring type of concepts, phrases, ideas that you have found with some of your clients? Just to give our listener a good sense of the range of different things to explore as they're seeking these for themselves.
Sure. And there are many listed that is part of the Aliveness Mindset book. Off the top of my head, it could be thrilling, energizing, calm, present, equanimity. Those are just a handful that I'm thinking off the top of my head. If you were to give me a minute, I could get to the page in the book of that. But in other words, it's a range. And I think it's a good guide. But part of me would say, before you were to look in the book as a guide, I'd invite you just to self-reflect. Because what I find, if I tell you what I think your anchoring mindsets are, is not going to be nearly as powerful as you using your own intelligence to say, man, just that one word creates a visceral reaction in my body. Boom, that's one. And so it's okay to iterate. This is your first draft. Then you can have other drafts with the words, but kind of make that a puzzle to bring out whatever combination is going to bring out that biggest feeling within you.
Yeah, I know one of them for me is curious and curiosity. And that has been, for me, one of the words I've really been trying to cultivate over the last year or so, is more and more, how can I show up with curiosity? That's the best self that I want to be showing up with these days, is more and more of that, and not remotely having all the answers or being stuck in my way of thinking, or which I still, let's be, you know, truth in advertising, I still am, and at time to time, but to try to show up with more curiosity. So you're right, there's just so many, and what's resonant for you as an individual.
What I'm hoping is that the listeners are beginning to think of words already.
Yes.
And I encourage you to write those down, whether it's a word for your anchoring mindset, whether it's a story or a memory when you were alive. These are all clues for you in your process to discover your own version to access your aliveness.
All right. So we're going to get those concepts. We're going to anchor in those. And you've got some practices that you shared around that about exposure and daily connection to those. And then in the aliveness practice that you describe it, there's two other elements of living it and feeling it. So we've anchored it. And what are living and feeling it about?
You know, living it is, what are things that I could do to prolong and extend my feeling of aliveness? So in other words, maybe, okay, I'm feeling kind of alive now. How can I keep that up at a high level? And what I call those are accelerants. Accelerants are things that we reliably do that foster our version of aliveness. For you, it might be running. For me, it's riding my bike. It could also be taking a walk in nature. It could also be walking my dog, playing with my kids, whatever that might be. But there are things, instead of being ad hoc about what are you going to put on your calendar, if these are accelerants, things that reliably make me feel alive, I intentionally make sure that I am placing those and scheduling those throughout the week. That way I'm setting myself up for success.
You know, as you're talking there, Jack, about reliably scheduling those things, so many of us have these, maybe self-destructive is too strong, but they feel self-destructive in the context of this conversation, where, I don't know, they're the cheap fast food replacements of what are actually accelerants. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you encounter that with your clients and if you have any observations or suggestions about that.
Well, I think one of the things I want to highlight, there's a difference between adrenaline and aliveness. And adrenaline is a human strategy to survive when we have to for short periods of time. You know, we're being chased by a tiger. Adrenaline is going to help you run as fast as possible. Or you've heard stories of people lifting cars when someone's stuck. That is not aliveness. Aliveness is something that comes from within, and it really involves your head, your heart, your gut, like your passion, like there's something that's feeding your soul that's creating this unique feeling, you know. And I would say that I interchange aliveness and passion and purpose flow. And in my mind, they're somewhat interchangeable. Others might distinguish it, but again, we're going for things that on a long-term basis are a healthy way for us to feel invigorated.
Okay. So as you are thinking about this aliveness practice, living it, feeling it, anchoring it, you've also got seven components of an aliveness mindset that you get into. And to remind us who we're talking to, we're talking to Jack Craven. The book is The Aliveness Mindset, Lead and Live with More Passion, Purpose, and Joy. And Jack, as we get into these seven components, like there's so much here, we're definitely going to be able to cover it all. And I encourage people, you know, get a hold of the book and check all this out. But I do want to dive into this a little bit and explore these with you. There's so much richness here.
Thank you. One of the things that I do is I ask clients to think of five stories where they felt alive. And the stories can just take a minute or two. And what I did was I've written many of them down. And then after looking at all these different versions of aliveness, I was able to draw out different traits that I thought were common traits throughout everyone's experience. I want to state off the top, this list is not inclusive. It is not everything, but these are common things that I think really are a foundation. And one of the first ones is ownership. Ownership is that I'm taking responsibility for my experience. And it could be everything from, wow, I've got a horrible job or a horrible spouse or whatever. And I'm not saying that these are easy decisions to make, but your decision to stay in those situations is a choice. And I think a lot of people can get into kind of victim consciousness or blame the other person. And I'm here to say that when I was unhappy 12 years ago, I was blaming others. I needed to take ownership. If I didn't take ownership, I wouldn't be where I am today. I had to own that I am responsible for where I am in my life and my own unhappiness. And so that is one of the first ones. I'm sorry, I'll pause.
No. Just it's important. And this concept of ownership and responsibility, I just want to tease it out because I think there's what you are saying and then there's what you're not saying, you know. So to clarify, we are responsible for the choices that we have in front of us and that we're making today, and to be conscious of those and to make those. We're not necessarily responsible for all the external circumstances that we were born into, that, you know, environment happens, things outside of us happen. Our responsibility, the thing we have to own if we're going to be alive, is our choices now.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Well said. And I'm glad you distinguished that. And the second trait is what you talked about with curiosity. Mm-hmm. I call it openness. Same thing. And I think that the more that I can be a judgmental person, if I'm being honest, and that's just, you know, my brain, that's just where it goes. That doesn't mean I have to share my judgments with everyone. And yet the more that I can maintain curiosity, I call that it quiets my judger. I stay more open, I get less reactive, and I believe that I am able to connect more with other people. And also, I learn that not all of my assumptions or judgments are correct. And so that to me is one of the second kind of foundations of the traits. It's ownership, and then it's openness.
So I just want to dive a little bit deeper with openness for a moment. One of the questions that I am asking anybody who is a proponent of openness, a proponent of curiosity in all of these different contexts, is do you have any advice on how to stay open or curious when, more than anything else, you want somebody else to be open and curious for you? Yeah. And so there's that feeling, and I see this happen with people all the time, where you know, you have two folks who are starting to butt heads and feelings are hurt, whatever else. And one person, you know, if they're in their best self, they're like, yeah, how's that look from your perspective? They're really genuinely asking, genuinely curious. But once they start to feel like, why can't you see my side of this? And I want to see yours, but why won't you see mine? It can start to escalate and spin. And I'm curious, do you have any suggestions or recommendations on how to get back to that openness when you start to spin off center?
Appreciate the question, and this comes up a lot. All of the practices we're talking about, it's almost like playing tennis against the wall. In other words, you don't need the other person to be playing the same game you are. That's one. And what I want to distinguish, I know you said, well, what if the other person isn't open to your ideas or your perspective, which I think certainly happens. I think what people actually want is for the other person to see it their way. Mm-hmm. They want the other person to say, you're right. I am seeing the world just the way you do. And that is another game that is probably destined where you're going to lose. And so if you can allow, and I call these like a move, like back in the Olympics, like a difficult move on the diving board is a 1.25 degree of difficulty. A difficult move is I can hold my perspective, and I can be curious about yours, and you can hold yours, and I can hold mine, and we don't have to, neither one of us has to win. Is that always possible? No. Is it aspirational? That's what I'm inviting. Is I can just be curious about how you see the world. It could be completely different than I see it. But I can also say that, okay, based on how you grow up and your life experiences, it would make sense that you see the world that way.
All right, so we're going to hold that openness with the advanced diving skill. I don't know what the rating is on that one, but being able to hold our own and be curious for the other and not have to have them see it our way. We're going to put this list of cannot win scenarios. Yeah. Someone else always say, you're right, I get it, I see it your way. Winning the calendar, winning the to-do list, because none of those are winnable. All right, so let's keep going. We've got ownership, we've got openness. What else?
The next one is authenticity. And it's interesting, David, where a lot of people aspire to authenticity, and a lot of the people I know have a hard time even knowing what is authentic within themselves, because they can get locked in their head about how they think they should be. They can get locked in their head about wanting approval from other people. And all of these things cloud our own knowing about what it is to be authentic. And what I have found is that when we do kind of peel away some of the layers, the judgments and the concerns that they have, the authenticity is clear. But it's how others might perceive them when they're in this authentic state that again causes people to cloud themselves in terms of, or at least resist being authentic because they're afraid that others aren't going to approve of their actions.
Hmm. Questions once again on this one. And I, you know, they always bring up real life scenarios been in recently. I was talking with I was there for it, but very accomplished and very young leader. I mean, this person's accomplished lots of amazing things, very well respected for their age, held in high regard, but still very much on the younger end of the lifespan curve. And they were at an after hours thing in a professional environment. And they let their hair down, and some four-letter words started slipping out, you know, things like this. Clearly, the senior leader was not appreciative. Younger leader completely missed that. So, and got some coaching from a colleague afterwards, said, hey, listen, I don't know if you picked up on that, but that was not working for the senior leader there. And, you know, you want to watch that in the future. And the younger leader was really like, wait a minute. And not from a defense, I mean, a little bit defensive, but really genuinely questioning, like, what does it mean to be authentic? When can I be myself? If I can't be myself there, when can I ever be myself? You know, these kinds of questions. And so I'm curious how you might coach or work through that with someone.
You know, that is an interesting one, because as I was talking, as I was just listening to your story, you know, there is this idea of there can be of, hey, this is me. And this is me could be a person that could be, some might view as abrasive or disrespectful or, you know, even worse than that. And so what I'm inviting is that may be your authentic version. And now you're getting feedback about how others are perceiving that. Now, here's my perspective. I imagine others are going to have different perspective. You can choose to be, this is me. I'm going to express profanity in a setting. Or what I tend to see happen is when you're exploring your authentic self, it's going to be a little bit messy. People are going to give you reaction and feedback, and then you get to choose, can I still find my authenticity while making some adjustments, or is this really not me anymore? And that's a self-assessment for each of you to make. And I would just say this, that I think it takes a lot less energy to try to just be your one authentic self than to try to figure out, I'm going to be one person with David, another person with someone else, and another person with someone else. And so to me, I think it's a bit of trial and error. And it's also trusting your own instincts about what is really most important in your authentic self. I imagine it's your values. I imagine it's your ability to feel like this is who I am. You know, so long as, I would hope that you're not offending others, but that could be a part of it too. And again, it's your choice.
Goes back to that first one, the ownership piece, is that it's just data. Now you have to make a decision.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. We've talked ownership, openness, authenticity. Again, we're talking with Jack Craven. The book is The Aliveness Mindset: Lead and Live with More Passion, Purpose, and Joy. And we have talked about the aliveness practice, anchoring in those key concepts that are when you feel most alive. What does that look like for you? Living those, feeling those. And now we're talking about seven components of aliveness, the aliveness mindset. Ownership, openness, authenticity are things we've talked about so far. So Jack, let's maybe get into a couple more here.
Yeah. The next one is awareness. And what I like to say is that, you know, this goes into self-awareness. If you're not aware of your behaviors, if you're not aware of how you're impacting others, if you're not aware of your emotions, then we're just in a reactive state. And awareness is the first step toward change. Awareness is, I just insulted someone. I just offended someone. And then now I have a choice. And I think this really ties into the last conversation. The choice is I can keep doing what I'm doing and hit the gas harder, or I can adjust. You know what? Can I still be authentic and not express profanity? For some people, the answer might be no. For me, I do that all the time. Are there companies I'm not dropping F-bombs, but are there companies where I'm swearing? Many. And I think people actually can appreciate that. There's some research that shows that actually brings out more authenticity and vulnerability with teams. But I'm also here to say, if I notice that there's a company where that's not going on, I just modify my language. I still feel authentic. It requires awareness. Awareness that I'm reactive. Awareness of my impact. All of those things.
I think about it as stepping on toes. You know, if I accidentally back up and accidentally step on somebody's toe, like, I didn't mean to do that. So, and I'm going to try to be more aware and not step on their toe. Like, that's not necessarily, unless I consider myself to be a toe stomper, in which case you better not wear sandals around me. Different story. All right. So that's that's awareness after authenticity. So the remaining three are courage, tenacity, and love. And I think I'm going to ask you, maybe let's just talk about courage for a moment, because I love the framing in the book. You talk about, and you do this throughout the book, you take real conversations, draw out the principles so that we can do the same thing for ourselves. Okay, and you mentioned fear earlier. Fear is a part of life. It's not going away. Courage is, you know, we're dealing with that and so forth. But part of the way that you frame that is it's not about your goals, it's about your mission. And I wonder if you might tease that out for us, because I thought that was a really powerful way. And it also goes to helping us deal with being where we are and focusing on that as opposed to whatever the circumstances are that it's easy to otherwise look at.
Yeah, thanks. I don't know anyone who can really achieve their life dreams without needing a lot of courage. And courage means stepping into the unknown, not knowing if you're going to be successful. Courage might be, you know, expressing a want and being turned down. Courage is what helps you face your fears, that there's something more important that you want, that you're willing to step into the fear and fail or look silly or be rejected or whatever it's going to be. And what I hope, and I'm really glad you brought this one up, because I do think, as I'm just tuning into this, I can't imagine my journey without needing the courage. It's all of these tools help you get clear on what you want, what you most want and dream in life, and have tools to accomplish those and overcome the fear. And fear is going to show up in a lot of ways along the way. You know, even when I have clients vision, almost nearly every time after they vision, within 1 or 2 minutes, they begin to have fear-based thoughts about why that can't be. Mm. And so you need courage to just let your ideas breathe, let your dreams breathe, let them give a chance so that you can get excited, so that that becomes so empowering that you have courage to overcome whatever obstacles are getting in your way.
And it seems to me that relates quite a bit to the next one, which is tenacity. And I love how, you know, in the book, you shared an example of someone you were coaching who, they just go full out. And their first week or two, they're doing all the practices and you add some more. I mean, they're like 2 weeks in, they're like, whoa. But this is not a sprint. Aliveness is not a 1 or a 2 week endeavor. And that's where the tenacity comes in. So let's explore that.
Yeah, I think your 50-mile race is tenacity. How many times did you feel pain? And I don't know about you, when I've done marathons, it's not about the next mile marker. It's how can I get to the next telephone pole? And I think that there are some of those days. And I just feel like there's something about the steady progress when you're facing adversity is so important. You know, courage gets you to the starting line and maybe to start. Tenacity is what gets you to the finish line. And just even in this book, David, it took 3 years out of my life. 3 years. And let me tell you, I heard a lot of constructive criticism that was also soul crushing. And yet there was truth to it, and it helped make the book better. That's not to say that I didn't have the wind knocked out of me. I did, but tenacity carried me through that. And I just asked myself literally at my lowest point, and I said, am I going to finish this book or am I not? So if I'm going to finish this book, get up, and what's the next thing you need to do?
Yeah, well done you on that. It is no, for anyone listening, and I am a huge encourager of people to write and get started on that book they have inside them. But I also try to be really honest about it, is that I have six behind me in my backpack now that I've written, and some co-authored and some on my own. Mm-hmm. And every single one of them, there's not a one of them that doesn't have those moments. Yeah. And where you got to pick yourself up and go, okay. You know, I love the running metaphors. And I don't know, someday I'm going to have to devote an episode just to those metaphors, because, you know, as you're talking about it, and you've done the marathons and with this the long races and things, and the tenacity, and it's all built in those small moments before you even get to the starting line. Like, you know, it's so much of the building blocks of the day in, day out when you don't particularly feel it. And, but okay, can I just do 40 minutes today? You know, yeah. That kind of thing. And so I'm thinking about those anchors and going back and cultivating, okay, all right, I'm not really in an ownership place right now. I don't really feel like it. The world stinks. All right, well, can I do 40 minutes of ownership?
You know, but that's really the truth. And I put stories in there because, and many of them come from my own experiences, where am I here to tell you that I feel vibrantly alive, you know, the 10 or 12 hours that I'm awake or whatever it is? No. And on some days, you know, I can't even imagine that. But sometimes it's just, how can I take one step to get out of my hole? If I feel stuck, the goal isn't, you know, getting out of the hole. It's I'm able to take a step forward toward the ladder to get out of the hole. And I just give myself some grace. Like, okay, I'm having a hard day. This is all I can accomplish today.
Yeah, and inertia and momentum are real. They really do build. Well, I would be remiss of me if we didn't at least give the final one a sentence or two before we get to the rest of the episode here and close things up. But love is number seven. So,
yeah. You know, I'll be honest, I wasn't sure if I was going to put this one in there because I know that people can have, what about love in the workplace and all these other kind of thoughts that might come up. And I do want to say that when I'm working with the best teams in the organizations, some people will actually say, I love my coworkers. I love being a part of this. And they mean it from the bottom of their heart. And I want to honor that some people, that is not their level of comfort. So I wouldn't force that. What I do want to say is that there's different ways to express love. And when you can do that to the people around you, they will respond. They will give you their discretionary time, efforts, and energy. And one of the top ways to do that is by giving the other person your full, undivided attention. Have them feel heard. Have them feel seen. Acknowledge and appreciate the great things that you see within them, even if they don't see it.
I love that definition of love. You know, there's so many, it's one of those words. I'm with you on that. I think love has lots of place in the workplace. And, you know, even if you're having to terminate somebody, I think to be able to do that from a true place of compassion and having their best interests at heart is a way better place to be than anger or frustration or fear or anything else. But yes, we're not talking about romantic love. We're talking about love in a very different definition of the word.
Yes.
Which I so appreciate you spelling out for us, all of those elements, if the person feels seen, feels heard, feels valued, that we have their best interests at heart, what a difference that makes. All right, so we're talking with Jack Craven. The book is Aliveness Mindset, Lead and Live with More Passion, Purpose, and Joy. Jack, we've been talking about the seven components of the aliveness mindset, and you've just touched on them briefly. There's so much more we can get. The aliveness practice to reach that optimal state of anchoring, living, and feeling into those things. I have another question for you about, you know, we're going to get, you know, to the hard part of life here in just a moment. But before we do, I want to ask you where we should go to connect with you, find out more, find the book, any resources. Yeah, where should we go? What's the next step?
Yeah, thank you. My website is jackcraven.com. C-R-A-V-E-N. And that is one place that has not only a lot of, it has a whole tag or icon devoted to the book. There's also a sample chapter there just to give you a little idea of what it's about. You can also connect with me. It's jack@jackcraven.com to email me. I'd be happy to answer any question any of your listeners has. My purpose in life is to help others feel alive. So I am here to spread that knowledge and help people suffer less and do all that. So those are the two primary ways you can get a hold of me.
I love that. And what a mission.
Yeah, no.
It's, help people suffer less and live their best life. I love it.
Yeah, I suffered a lot, and I want to help others, you know, learn how I did to really to minimize those kinds of experiences.
Yeah, going back to courage, you know, when you're talking about that mission helps to drive that courage, as opposed to a goal, which may or may not, you know, on any given day, but a mission, boy, that gets us up in the morning, keeps us going.
Exactly. Well,
all right. Well, speaking of keeping going, how do we, and you've got some things to say about this in the book, how do we remain in an optimal state through the ups and downs of life? And, you know, life has all kinds of things it throws at us. I was just talking with a friend of mine, one of those long-term friends who just doing a touch base, and oh my goodness, you know, parent is sick, uncle is sick. Sick parent isn't visiting sick uncle because, you know, they're sick. You know, there's just so much going on, and then their own child is having a hard time. It's hard. Life is difficult and challenging sometimes. So, well, how do you recommend we navigate all that?
Well, I love the question, and it certainly is. I'm saying that certainly some days sometimes are just really going to be challenging. And so, you know, whether it's a gratitude practice, whether it's, you know, just giving yourself compassion that I'm going through a hard time. Those are just a couple things that I want to invite when we're really at our lowest. And, you know, when you think about Some of the challenges that you just described, with your friend, part of it could be sometimes I just wake up and I'm like, I'm just glad I'm gonna get to be alive today. Really, I get to live another day. That today may not be that great day, but I'll have the day after that. And I'm a big fan of autobiographies, and Norman Lear was this famous writer director in the 1970s with a lot of hit shows, and he lived to over 100, and he wrote a book that I just loved called Even This I Get to Experience. And what he's really talking about there is that whether it's sorrow, whether it's death, or whether it's other things, is that this is all part of life. So aliveness could be I felt, incredible grief thinking about the father that I lost, or the parent, or whatever that might be, but that is a part of life. And so aliveness can take different forms. It's not always with a smile on our face, but it could be, wow, I had such a deep level of connection to this person that's no longer here that I'm still grieving months later. How lucky I am to have had that connection.
I'm thinking as you're talking about that of you're mentioning those walks in nature earlier, and that's definitely a core part of my being. And you go into a forest, and the aliveness of the forest includes these trees that are growing, and pine needles and leaves and everything. And then you've got all the ground cover, and you got the birds and everything chirp. But then you also have this layer on the forest floor of decomposing vegetation and animals and the fungus and doing all the things, right? And it's just this totality of life that is all of it. And I know that's philosophical and we're a practical show here, but at the same time, like cultivating that awareness, I think for all of us to find that, as we said up at the beginning of the show, like if we can come in every day to whatever our management leadership challenges are or opportunities or whatever it is that we're doing with that, we're going to have more energy. We're going to be more motivating. We're going to be more positive to be around. And we're going to enjoy ourselves more, which, hey, I'll take that.
Exactly. That is really what the whole book is about, David. Really well said. And that's my want for everyone, is that this is possible. This isn't some, I used to think, wow, I wish I were that person and whatever. It's like I created things in my life where I'm satisfied, I'm content with the life I have today. And I want to help others have that same experience.
And by satisfied and content, you mean embracing, I think. You're not saying, well, okay, I'm content. lean back, throw up my hands.
I mean, in my life, actually, content is a very difficult thing for me to experience. I think for the majority of my life, content is that I'm happy with all of my life, all parts of it. That means it doesn't mean that it's perfect. It means I can navigate the challenges, and I mostly experience a lot of great moments of joy and satisfaction and connection.
Well, I want that for you listening to the show today, and I'm so glad that you're joined us. All right, Jack, I'm going to give you a final thought here. Jack Craven, Aliveness Mindset, Lead and Live with More Passion, Purpose, and Joy. Hope you'll check out the book. Jack, what is one place you would recommend we start as we are cultivating? I want to have this aliveness mindset. I want to get started. I want more of this. I got to tell you, I'm already feeling more alive, even for our conversation. So for our listener, what's the next thing they should do?
Well, hopefully they'll read the book, obviously. I would also encourage, there's a couple other books that I think are just really formative and tech, just this idea about having a greater mastery of mindset. I can't think of a better book than Carol Dweck's book, Growth Mindset, who really is the person that came up with like really this whole concept here. I would also
Fundamental.
recommend, just as a leadership model, the 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. That's a great framework for people. And another book based on neuroscience is called Start Here, Master the Lifelong Skill of Well-being. I think those would be a great place to start for your library.
Fantastic. Listener, I hope that you'll take Jack's advice, check out the book, ask yourself, when have you felt most alive? What does aliveness feel like to you? And what would it mean for your life if you could experience that regularly? Because Jack's got the roadmap for you. Hope that you'll choose aliveness. Jack, thanks for being a guest here with us on Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Thank you, David. Really enjoyed our conversation.
As did I. Like I said, I am feeling more alive. Listener, I hope you will choose aliveness as well and be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.